Cheering at pro wrestling shows in Japan is back, and 2023 is already shaping up to be a big year in the history of pro res. That's why you should listen to the Emerald Flow Show. From the Royal Road to the Green Mat, Paul and Gerard take you into the world of All Japan Pro Wrestling and Pro Wrestling NOAH. Not only do we analyze events, but we examine business, who is getting over, what angles are working or not. Occasionally, we take a look at other Japanese promotions like DDT and Zero One. So if you're looking for more coverage of the world of Japanese wrestling, check out the Emerald Flow Show on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on all of your favorite podcast apps.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome back to another episode of The Good, The Bad, and The Hungy here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. I am your host, Tyler Fornes, and with me, as always, is Fred. I regret saying you smell like Newports in BK Moreland. God, I love when people talk about Newports and Eddie Kingston. It's just perfect.
He does seem like a guy that would partake of this.
Yeah, he absolutely does. And last night's Dynamite was quite interesting, but I think the A topic that we have to talk about, Fred, here is Tony Khan deciding to release the all-in footage just days after CM Punk's interview with Ariel Helwani. And the footage was like your basic security camera footage. There's no audio, so all you see is what's going on. And it proved that Punk was lying, that Perry confronted him, that Punk obviously confronted Jungle Boy Jack Perry, and he got the physicality started, and then he threw the punch. And my biggest takeaway from this is Punk is a liar, and literally nobody's opinion on this is going to change. And
I
think never. It was smart to air it, even though I think I'm in the minority on it. Just air it and be like, nope, he's a liar. This is what happened. And I thought it was really smart to weave it in with the Bucks storyline, even though the Bucks didn't really want to do it, because look, they're slimy shitbags. And they're like, this took away from our moment. This story took away from us going in there and then using it as a reason why they lost and helping build the match to Dynasty. But the problem is nobody's talking about the match Dynasty because of this.
No. I think I am far away from you on this and how it went. I thought it was, if not an outright, I don't think it did any like lasting damage to AEW or anything, to be clear, but I think it was extraordinarily dumb. And I get, you know, wanting to release it. I don't even think I have so much of a problem with that, but I just think how they did it didn't work. I don't think it succeeded at advancing the storyline at all, and I think that's I think that's a big problem. I just think it was really dumb, honestly, and I get the desire to release it, and you know, but like, what, I don't know what they really gain from it other than showing that they're going to stand up to CM Punk, which, okay, fine. I don't know if that's really of value. I don't think releasing it really convinced too many people that CM Punk is like a bad person or something, or like, I don't even see how it really benefits AEW if you change anyone's mind. I think it was just Tony was upset and wanted to, I mean, he was lied about the whole situation. CM Punk was, you know, I mean, he was exaggerating stuff, but he wasn't entirely truthful. It certainly was not truthful. And I just don't think that they gained that much from it. And as far as weaving the storyline into it, I think that it really kind of screwed up the whole face heel dynamic of the Young Bucks FTR match, because You know, FTR is the babyface, Bucks are the heels, of course. And the heels acted like, or I'm sorry, the Bucks acted like heels through the entirety of introducing the video and all that. And it wasn't like, but, you know, it wasn't anything that anything that they or FTR did wrong. But FTR is identified as the, you know, as the friends of CM Punk. Boo, bad, right? CM Punk, not friend of the company. And, but FTR, the baby faces, go out there and do a rah rah pro AEW speech, right? While being right after being talked about as being good friends of CM Punk. And the Young Bucks, the heels, the asshole executives of the company, are positioned where they are introducing this footage of CM Punk being extremely unprofessional. And, but they're the heels. But they're going to show you the video of CM Punk, the other bad guy, footage of him, you know, doing something. And I know that they were like, oh, this distracted us from our match, and they're just making up excuses, and that is heel behavior. But I just don't think this worked. And of all the people involved, the biggest babyface is Jack Perry, because he got suspended, or at least hasn't been on AEW TV. You know, part of it was probably a suspension, and part of it has not been, at least since his time in New Japan, I reckon. And they're going to, obviously they tied him in because they're bringing him in to be an associate of the Young Bucks and all that. But he's going to be a heel in that role. But tell me how a guy who has been left off TV for 7 months because CM Punk took, frankly, kind of a cheap shot at him, how that makes Jack Perry a bad guy. Because I can't even wrap my mind around that part. If anything, he's a super babyface. He's been treated poorly, I think. After you watch that footage and ask someone, okay, should he have been kept off TV for over half a year? I think any reasonable person would have said, well, no. Now, I understand being mad at him because of his role in starting it all by, you know, dropping the real glass line. But let's not forget that CM Punk, out of nowhere, dragged his name through the mud just a couple weeks earlier. So I think Jack Perry was pretty, you know, I 100% understand where he was coming from with feeling like he had to fire back, because his reputation, which had been pretty damn spotless up to that point, was dragged through the mud so that CM Punk could, you know, be like, oh, I'm the real professional in this place. You know, when one of his countless, you know, leaks to the wrestling media that certainly seemed to come from him. I obviously don't know that, but I mean, I definitely suspect it. That's my opinion. Could be wrong. I doubt it. It's just like, I don't think this really did anything to advance the Young Bucks FTR storyline in a positive manner that you couldn't have accomplished some other way. I think if you had just shown the footage ahead of introduced by, like, you know, some neutral announcer, and shown it, and then cut to the Bucks like hijacking a camera and being like, see, this is why our friend Jack Perry has been screwed. This cost us our match. We were distracted. And do it that way, do it slightly different. I think it would have worked a little better. But I just think the whole heel face dynamic on this whole thing is kind of screwed up as far as a storyline. And as far as a benefit to AEW, I mean, again, outside of, like, you know, sticking it to CM Punk, which I don't even know if it did that effectively. I don't know what was gained. I don't think it's going to draw a single extra buy on the pay-per-view. I don't think it's getting any new viewers long-term. Maybe it'll pop a quarter hour, but, like, do we really want to go down this road of, you know, trying to pop quarter hours with, you know, dubiously beneficial stuff? I don't think that's wise. So I just think it's a whole mess. It got ripped on Twitter by several performers, including Danhausen, who I think very much does not want to be in AEW anymore, or at least feels like he's being screwed because he's not featured on TV with any regularity. You know, he was friends with CM Punk, so I don't know how much of a role that plays or not. But I don't know, man. I don't think this accomplish what they had hoped it would. And then you add in, now look, I think Will Ospreay kind of slapping back at the Triple H line about him not wanting to grind, which, I mean, come on, buddy. That's just a ridiculous statement to make about most people in pro wrestling, but especially Will Ospreay, who is a workaholic. I mean, he puts his body through so much to have these high level matches on a regular basis, and to say that he doesn't want to grind because he didn't go to WWE is a preposterous, you know, statement. But you know, then there's the, you mentioned it before the show, and I'll have you go through it, but the Wade Keller report that the Bucks didn't really want to introduce that segment, and that sorry, that as I blink out, and that Will Ospreay didn't really want to fire back at Triple H. I don't think Ospreay is a particularly combative person in that way, at least. Now I think that the Ospreay promo was fine, but I feel like in a vacuum it was fine. I feel like on this show where they devoted a whole ass segment, commercial to commercial, to getting back at CM Punk, you add on the Will Ospreay promo and it creates this kind of weird tension, the situation where the show's feels like a large chunk of it is devoted to settling scores that don't have anything to do with your product. And I think in general, AEW just needs to nose to the grindstone, put out, you know, great shows on a weekly basis. And I don't think that this, you know, these two things really did anything to push that forward, to elevate Dynasty or AEW as a company or anything. And I don't know, it just feels like an own goal in a way. I don't think it was a disaster. But the thing it kind of reminded me the most of is back in the Monday Night Wars, and this was when I think WCW was winning on three consecutive shows, a Nitro, a Thunder, and then a pay-per-view. Eric Bischoff issued a public challenge to Vince McMahon to fight him at the upcoming pay-per-view. On Thursday, he read the legal letter from WWF telling him not to mention Vince McMahon on air anymore. And then on Sunday, he did his full entrance and then had the referee count out Vince McMahon, who did not show up for their fight, because why would he? And it just gave me vibes like that. Now, obviously, I don't think that segment, you know, that little segment killed WCW or anything, but it had very much the same "don't put in the newspaper that I'm mad" kind of vibes, you know, to go back to that drill tweet that was referenced by Hangman earlier this year. I don't know, man. I think it was all just extraordinarily awkward and not successful. You're on mute, my man.
Yes, I am. I don't think it was as successful as they would hope it would be, but I also don't think it's this adjunct failure either. They found a way to work these pot shots into storylines and not create storylines from these pot shots. So for me, I'm not super linking it to WCW, even though I completely understand the comparisons, because Eric Bischoff challenging Vince McMahon is completely different than, hey, CM Punk's a liar and we're just going to prove he's a liar, but we're not going to do it as a standalone thing. We're going to work it into the canon of a storyline that we're already brewing, which made at least tangible sense. So to me, that's the biggest difference here. Tony Khan is using these instances where he's frustrated and he wants to take these shots, but he's not just doing it to take shots. He's finding a way to work it into actual stories. And I think that's the biggest difference. And that's why I don't think it's this adjunct disaster. Now, on the other side of it, I think you laid out really well. No matter what, this was going to come off relatively poorly for AEW. And I think this was more Tony Khan was going to stand up for his guys and he was going to stand up against people who were lying. And I think there's some honor to that. I think there's some instances where, hey, they're going to take shots at us. I'm going to defend our honor. And this is how I'm going to do it. And I think that is really cool from a boss to say, hey, I'm going to defend us. However, how you do it can also be fairly criticized, and they deserved the criticism that they got for it. Now, as we talk about the Wade Keller piece, the Young Bucks had to be talked into it by Tony Khan. so did Will Ospreay with the grind line. And I think that's an important thing here. They had to be talked into it. They didn't want to say these things. They didn't, like, I don't think that they're against these pot shots, but they're against, they were against these specific pot shots. And I think when you're having some of these conversations, that it makes it a little bit difficult. And it makes it difficult for fans of AEW to really try and get behind it. And I like these pot shots. Take shots. Get more of Cody taking a sledgehammer to the throne. I love that shit. Fight back. Fight the power. Like, do those things. But let's just be smarter about it. Let's take shots without being provoked. Let's say, like, the line, AEW is the home of wrestling, or where wrestlers wrestle. I love that. What was it? I think it was 60 minutes in between the semi-main and the main event of night one. 60 minutes! How absurd is that? Now, they remedied it on night two. They went from match to match. But 60-minute time difference between the semi-main and the main event of night one of WrestleMania was absolutely absurd. You have, like, the big entrances for Roman Reigns. You have the big entrances for Cody. You have the big entrance for The Rock. That's fine. But from bell to bell, over 60 minutes. AEW should say it more that this is where wrestlers wrestle. Yeah, they still have plenty of promo segments. Yeah, they still have some vignettes. But there's more bell-to-bell wrestling per minute, I believe, than there is on WWE's Monday Night Raw. And when it comes to pay-per-view time, it's not even a question who has more professional wrestling on their airwaves. Pay-per-views are wrestling-oriented. Yeah, there's still a little bit talking, a backstage segment or two, but it's wrestling. And I think that's the difference. And we can talk about this as well, Fred. WWE starting to use the term professional wrestling again, and Triple H making that well known. Like, this war is going to become really interesting, especially if we end up getting even more clarification with this Janelle Grant lawsuit. And I want your opinion on this. If WWE knows that Triple H is 100% clean of any wrongdoing ever, then I think what they did at WrestleMania was fine. But if he's anywhere complicit, man, they're in an interesting spot moving forward. Because
yes, they are. Yes, that's a great point.
I understand burying Vince McMahon and bury him under the sun. Absolutely. But this is Vince McMahon's son-in-law who's been around the company in an executive type office role for, I think, almost 15 years. You're going to tell me that you're going to go all in publicly with him being the face. It's the Paul Levesque era. I think it was Brandon Thurston that said it was like Stalin era propaganda and the whitewashing. And that was just a phenomenal tweet from Brandon Thurston. I mean, we shouldn't be surprised. He's probably the most brilliant individual in wrestling media. God, but
he's so good.
Oh,
he really is.
He's excellent. It's kind of like just a long way of saying we're shifting gears, but this Triple H era thing is just, man, going all in with him just feels like it's about to blow up in their faces based on circumstance, based on relationships that we know publicly, because obviously Triple H is Vince McMahon's son-in-law, and we're not going to pin anything on him. But if anything comes out, oh boy.
Oh, yeah.
Oh boy.
They're going to be buying that copyright of Renaissance era off of Cody as fast as possible. By the way, since I'm bringing that up, some guy on Twitter is like, oh, this is now the Renaissance era, which is kind of eye-rolly, sure. Mm-hmm. But then, like, Cody rolls over and just copyrights it. Like, how does that work, man? Because he didn't have anything to do with creating it. That's pretty pretty crappy. Anyway. It's risky, man. There is some risk in here, and I don't know how that's going to work out, to be honest. Maybe it'll be just fine. Maybe it won't be a problem. But I just think that it's kind of they may regret that. Now, one thing I do want to say, because I step away for a second, and I want to talk about the actual footage, because we didn't really do that. What we saw. So, first of all, okay, one thing I do want to complain about. If you're going to broadcast this show on Dynamite, or broadcast this clip on Dynamite of CM Punk's very bad day, or very grumpy day, I guess, you cannot immediately try to scrub it from the internet with DMCA takedowns.
Which... Oh, no. Hold on. I disagree. I thought it was phenomenal that he went after the aggregator accounts that just clipped it. I thought it was great. It's awesome. But you know why? These aggregator accounts fucking stink, Fred. They all stink. If you're in the world of football, they all suck. And they make actual tangible money from this stuff. No. It's great. It's a fork in the side of all these aggregator accounts. Now, if you're doing it to, like, the Wrestling Observer newsletter account, okay, I completely understand your point of view. But... you know, the Dark Puro Flosions, the Drain Makers, all those that like aggregator accounts. No, screw them. I love it. I think it's great. And you know what? I'd say the same thing if WWE did it, because I think it's hilarious.
I gotta say, man, I think if you're going to put that footage out there, you got to put it out like full throated. You can't be half-assed about it.
Okay, that's a fair point. AEW's Twitter account within minutes or whatever should have just posted the clip.
They don't even have it up on YouTube. Like, that's the crazy thing to me. Yeah. Like, if you're gonna post it, like, or I mean, if you're gonna air it, fine, then put it on your YouTube, put it on your socials, be like, we're owning this. But instead, they just aired it once on TV and then are like, all right, well, no one will ever see this again, which obviously is not going to work. Goodness gracious, like, what's the deal with that? Like, just if you want people to see CM Punk being a fool, then you gotta just make sure it's out there. You can't be like, well, we'll show it to you once, but then you gotta come back to the Nickelodeon and give us another nickel so you can see it. Like, what in the world? Secondly, boy, CM Punk is living that Walter Mitty lifestyle, huh? Thinking he's the hero of the story. And meanwhile, like, the actual actions just show him, like, not being the hero of the story. Okay, this is what I saw when I watched the footage a couple times last night. And I was going to have it pulled up here on YouTube if I could, but I can't because, you know, the previous mission scrubbing. So I'm just going to not pull up YouTube TV and I'm just going to go off memory, because that's how a true professional should handle this, right? So you know, they get, you know, CM Punk approaches Jack Perry. Jack Perry doesn't get in anyone's face. He doesn't, like, step up to Punk. He doesn't do anything aggressive. He's just standing there talking. CM Punk is visibly angry. He gets in Perry's face. And then when Jack Perry takes his hands and run them, like, trying to gather up his hair, and I don't even think in, like, I got to do this real fast to, like, square up kind of thing. It's I'm just running my hands through my hair to straighten it out, whatever. It seems like Perry does that all the time on camera. Punk takes that opportunity to shove him in the chest and then go for a guillotine. Samoa Joe pulls Perry away after a few seconds. I think that after Perry is pulled away, Punk, who is furious, at one point you can see Tony Khan, I think, lean over the monitors while the brouhaha is going on to look over and, like, yell at them, I imagine. And then Punk, after pulled away, or after Perry is pulled away, kind of takes, like, does the I'm stepping forward, like, aggressive step forward thing towards Tony Khan. It looks like, again, I'm assuming Tony Khan was behind the monitors there. which I thought, like, that by itself, you know, ignoring anything else, is like, well, you're fired. Thank you for making this easy by trying to be aggressive towards your boss. And then he's like walked away by Badneck Jerry Lynn and Chris Hero, who comically is shown like running his hands down his face, and that, you know, the God, why kind of way. And that was the whole thing. I don't think Perry did anything wrong backstage. Now, people are saying, you know, maybe he said something and then he deserved to be punched. I don't think, or attacked. I don't think it works that way. Personally, I don't think there's anything really that Jack Perry could have said to CM Punk at that point that would have justified that kind of reaction. But I'm also not a pro wrestler. I'm just a normal person. So maybe this whole like fighting words theory applies more to pro wrestlers. I don't know. But I think, yeah, and it's not a surprise. Like, I did not expect to see something and be like, oh, actually, CM Punk was in the right. I think he just, unsurprisingly, came off terrible and looked like a dope.
Yeah. I don't know. CM Punk just looks like an ass. And yeah. Perry just looks like he was kind of minding his own business. And there's obviously some context missing because we don't have any audio. But I also understand like Khan kind of removing Perry from the company for a little bit, just be like, hey, you were the antagonist here, even though when it came to the physicality in the back, you know, you didn't do anything, because like you said the line, you knew what you were doing. Mm-hmm. You were shooting on pay-per-view, but the pre-show.
Yeah.
Come on, man. Come on. So I completely get that. And
he started up. Let's not act like he's, you know, without blame. But like, I 100% get why he did that. You know, I find it defensible. But we all know, I mean, already at that point, it was pretty well known that Punk was like more or less so unhappy he wanted to get fired. So I can't say I'm shocked by the results, if you will. But yeah, so. Yep, wrestling, baby, it's great.
Speaking of great, I think we should talk a little bit about WrestleMania and WrestleMania weekend before we kind of dive into the happenings of AEW canon. Excuse me, I burped as I was breathing in. That was one of the weirdest things I've dealt with in a long time. I want to talk about grudge matches. And to me, that was one of the big themes of the weekend. I didn't watch a lot of the stuff outside of WWE just because I changed jobs. I don't really have a lot of time. So I kind of punted WrestleMania weekend. Sounds like there was some really cool stuff, though, which I know we'll get into in a little bit. But to me, grudge matches was kind of the theme across WWE. You had Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes, that Chase U six-woman tag. Like, you had some real grudge matches. And then you get to WrestleMania, you had the Usos. You had Cody and Roman, which was, I don't know, not necessarily a grudge match, but it was a long story build. And then you had Bayley and Io. Nobody wrestled like it was a grudge match. You know who did? Only one person wrestled, really took it seriously that it was a grudge match. AJ Styles.
Yes, that's correct.
He did his little gimmick up at the top, and then the second he was done with his little pose, he like ripped off his coat and like sprinted to the ring and started beating up LA Knight. That's a grudge match. And it's something that I've noticed in WWE for a long time. They don't really do grudge matches well. Trick Williams and Carmelo Hayes should have been a brawl. It should have been like a street fight. It should have been these guys want to kill each other. Remember Gargano and Ciampa? Like those matches? They got long in the tooth eventually, but they wanted to kill each other. Mm-hmm. That's a grudge match, and that's something I think AEW does really well. The Texas Death Match with Hangman Page and Swerve Strickland. Hangman doesn't even do an entrance. He just starts beating the crap out of him and then gets a staple gun. That's within 5 minutes of the bell. Like, that's a grudge match, and I think right there is, for me, the biggest disconnect between what AEW is and what WWE is, where AEW is trying to create what the heart of professional wrestling was for decades upon decades. And WWE is trying to create professional wrestling in their own image rather than try to do what's historically worked and been over the course of our entire lives and beyond. So I thought that that was worth pointing out. It's just frustrating. If it's a grudge match, make it a grudge match. Make it feel like there's real hatred.
Yeah. Well, WWE is very much about their entrances and like hitting their poses and all that stuff. And I think that I think they've kind of created a product that is anathema to breaking out all my $5 words today, to wanting to have grudge matches. I think that that's not really what they're going for, because people have to, baby faces have to always smile, and they always have to, you know, the Miz has to remember that feud he had with a couple years ago with, hell, was it, who went after his family? Was it Bray Wyatt, or was it someone did an angle like involving attacking Miz's family, and you know, they to set up a pay-per-view match, and then the Miz came out for his pay-per-view match, and his entrance was 100% the same as always. He just went out top of the ramp, did the point and spin thing, and just acted like it was just another day at the office. And so I don't know, man. It's pretty silly, you know, in a way. It's just something the company doesn't do, and it's not something that they're really built to do, because you have to do so many extraneous things when you're doing a WWE show, when you're performing for them. You have to, you know, you have to hit your poses, you have to work the hard cam to death, you have to do the over the top, you know, theatrical nonsense. And you know, that's kind of why I'm not a fan of their modern style. So that's just kind of where I fall down on it, I guess.
That Miz one is just all time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's preposterous.
Preposterous, such a good word here, Fred. I'm proud of you for using it.
Got my dictionary out, so.
Hell yeah.
Now, as far as Mania itself, I thought, you know, I only watched the highlight matches, so like I skipped the Philadelphia street fight, and I skipped all the in-between stuff and a lot of the entrances, because I got, you know, I'm only on this earth for so long, and I'm trying to also hit all the indie shows too, or at least the highlights from those. But the I think kind of the key thing is I don't think there was a great match on Mania this weekend. And I don't think there was a clear like match of the weekend.
Mm-hmm.
Now the Voices staff were working on a poll for the best match of the weekend and the best show of the weekend. You know, the results of that I hope will be up on Friday. But I just think, I don't know. I mean, I thought there were quite a few really good matches and some, you know, I mean, great matches, really. I peaked at like 4 3/4 for Eddie and Mark Briscoe. That was my match of the weekend, personally. But I don't think there's anything on there that's going to really get necessarily match of the year contention across the board. And I think a lot of them, I think Action, their Dean show, their tribute show to the to Dean the writer, I think was probably the most successful of all the weekend shows in terms of accomplishing what they wanted to set out to do. I think some of the like the Stardom and DDT shows were pretty good. I think GCW's booking continues to be just kind of a weird mess. And I think Ring of Honor in general succeeded with their show. But, you know, in general, I think it kind of was I wouldn't say a disappointing weekend, because I think people had very low expectations coming in. But I think, I don't know, it feels like maybe the people putting together these extraneous shows around Mania Weekend in general don't have a great vision of what they're doing. I didn't have anything recommended to me off of For the Culture, and that should be such an easy show to put together to have great matches on it, because there's so many black talents out there looking to make a name, and, you know, instead we, you know, there's no buzz off that show whatsoever, which is kind of astonishing, and not in a good way. It's impressive, like, in that kind of bad, you know, how did you manage to, you know, mess this up kind of way. The one thing I did hear from it was that the biggest reaction was people were mad that Too Cold Scorpio lost to Jossie, and that's it. And I'm just looking through the card right now, and there's a bunch of like multi-man tags, or scrambles, of course, because it's a GCW show. I just don't know, man. I mean, it feels to me like, you know, like Myron Reed is stuck in it, and Calvin Tankman are stuck in a 10-man tag at the opener. You've got people like Jordan Blade, who I think I've seen a couple times, was pretty impressed by, in a four-corner tag. The women outside of, I think, one tag team in that four-corner tag, they get a six-woman scramble, and there's just not anything set up to, I think, let people in general really show out, and it's frustrating, because I think that show should be phenomenal every single year, and it just doesn't get that chance for whatever reason. So I don't know. I think GCW in general is frustrating in how they book. That's just my personal opinion, of course. I don't know why I needed to clarify that. I know that there's people out there that really like it, and I'm glad they do. I just, it's not, you know, it's, in general, it's not doing what I would hope for. And I think there's a fair bit of that, you know, this weekend, not just in GCW specifically, but like, I think the Mark Hitchcock show had a much weaker lineup than usual, which was unfortunate. And I don't know, man. I just feel like the whole super weekend thing is, you know, kind of dead.
What's going on, guys? This is Rich from the Flagship Podcast here on the Voice of Wrestling Podcast Network. If I could have a moment of your time, I'd like to tell you about one of our sponsors, Eufy Video Lock. Eufy Video Lock is a smart lock, a 2K camera, and a doorbell, all 3-in-1, offering you triple security. So you can have everything in one device rather than installing many pieces on your front door. But it's not just for security. The Eufy Video Lock is also for convenience. No more concerns about losing keys, and you can assign passwords to your family members and see them coming back home via the integrated cameras. Some other great features we love about the Eufy Video Lock is it is easy to install and set up with just a Phillips screwdriver, no drilling required. Keyless entry, no more fumbling for keys when your hands are full. You never have to worry about kids losing keys or passing among renters. You also have 0.3 second fingerprint recognition and 1 second unlocking. Again, 0.3 seconds, it's going to recognize your fingerprints, and in 1 second, it's going to unlock. And with the AI self-learning chip embedded, the more you use it, the more accurate it will be. Also, no battery anxiety. You have a rechargeable battery in there that could last around 4 months, and you will get a low battery notification before it runs out. Passcode unlocking, a remote control with a 2K clear sight, see who's at your door, and control from anywhere through the Eufy app. With enhanced night vision, you can have optimized view even in the evening. You can also secure your package delivery by view and two-way audio, and then best of all, no monthly fee. A bunch of other brands out there are going to charge you a monthly fee. You have your recordings locally, and you never have to pay for storage. Customer service, Eufy's got you handled as well. They're on standby for you 24/7, so you can enjoy a worry-free experience with an 18-month warranty, all backed by their professional customer service team. Contact them anytime by telephone, email, or live chat. Personally, as a homeowner, I love my Eufy video lock. I have the ability to see what's going on when I'm not home, when packages has arrived. And really the thing I love the most about it, the ease of being able to lock and unlock my doors without having to fumble with my keys and reach in my pocket or wait, no, crap, they're in my backpack, all that sort of stuff. All this is happening while my dogs are barking at me. You know what? Not anymore with the Eufy video lock. I touch it. 0.3 second fingerprint recognition. 1 second, door is unlocked. Much, much easier. So if you want to jump on board with Eufy Video Lock, search Eufy Video Lock. That is E-U-F-Y Video Lock. Again, that's Eufy Video Lock, E-U-F-Y Video Lock, or visit eufyofficial.com/videolock to see how you can gain complete control of your door.
It is dead, and it's because the indies don't have an evolve anymore. They don't, like, maybe a West Coast Pro, maybe a Deadlock can kind of get into that space, but the problem is the indie boom as we knew it is just kind of done, and with these television deals being so prevalent, like, why would you want to grind out in the indies for a couple years so you can get an even better deal when you can just get a great one right now? And, like, I don't blame anybody for taking the money. Take the money. You have a limited window to go get it. But for how talented the wrestlers can be, having places to work like Evolve, having places to work like with like people like Gabe Sapolsky, it's just a benefit. It's just a good thing for the wrestling business. And it stinks that, that that's kind of gone away. GCW's main event stuff is usually booked really well. The problem is they don't seem to care about the rest of the card. And you know what? Maybe they do care. It don't feel like it. Because when you're talking about the rest of a GCW card, it's scrambles. It's like the tag team division's kind of eh. Like the top of the card stuff's always been booked well. The deathmatch stuff for that crowd hits really well. And I think that's where GCW kind of has their cult-like following. And especially if you talk to some of the people who love GCW in our writer Slack and Voices of Wrestling, like they'll kind of tell you some of those same things. We need more Defies in West Coast Pros, and we need something to be a little bit more national, a little bit more widespread to really drive home that you can like develop as a traditional style wrestler in that way. Like, how the hell does Noah find Jack Morris? There are people out there that are really good workers. You just have to take the time to go find them. And I just hope that an indie, like if AEW could get bigger, I think that'd be great. Because I think AEW out of Chicago does a fantastic job in trying to grow indie wrestling and trying to provide a really good in-ring product. It's just the ecosystem just isn't there anymore. And that is really what's hurting indie wrestling, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I don't know, it's frustrating, but I did think there was some very good stuff over the weekend. I thought that I agree with you in general on the state of the American indie scene, but we also have the ability to bring over stars from Stardom, Dragon Gate, CMLL. And still, you know, you get some of this kind of middling booking. As far as Mania proper, I topped out at 4 stars on matches. I didn't have anything higher than that on any night. I know that people have gone hog wild on the Cody Roman Reigns match on Sunday night. Voting it up, it's at 9.17 right now, which undoubtedly puts it in the top 100 all time. Let me pull that up. No, shockingly, it's not in the top 100. I figured it would be. But it's highly rated, obviously. 9.17 is fantastic. I thought it was a good match with really weird booking. They managed to make the focus of the match anointing Cody Rhodes as their top guy about old retired guys with no real connection to the storyline. And they also made Seth Rollins look like a geek once more. Poor Seth Rollins, you try. Yeah, it's at 434 all time. So it's in the top 500 matches on Cage Match with at least 25 votes. I don't know, man. It just, I thought that Cody put on a great performance. I thought Roman at least looked a lot livelier than he has at other points in this title run. And instead, we kind of got, you know, like the most sports entertainment finish conceivable. You know, it's just very, very them. The best WWE match I saw all weekend was actually off of the NXT show, because, and I did not ever think I would say that the best WWE match in a weekend would involve Bron Breakker or specifically Baron Corbin, but they had a fantastic tag match with Axiom and Nathan Frazier. I thought that rocked, actually. I went 4.25 on that, and it's, I think it's in my top 10 matches for the weekend. I just had a lot of fun with that. And I thought the Ring of Honor show was really good, at least the stuff I watched, because, again, I was picking and choosing. I didn't watch the entire show, but I thought Kyle Fletcher and Lee Johnson had a fantastic match, which was very much Kyle Fletcher. I don't think Lee Johnson showed out on a super high level, but at the same time, I thought he looked better than I had considered him the last time I saw him, so he has improved. I thought the Stardom Trios match on Ring of Honor was really good, and I also liked the Athena and Hikaru Shida match, but it wasn't like a super high-level Athena match at the same time. I'm kind of wondering about Hikaru Shida. I didn't think she looked bad, but at the same time, I was kind of like, you know, this isn't Shida from a while ago, and I think that's notable. And a couple other matches I'm going to mention real quick from Stardom. I thought Megan Bain and Micah had a great match for the World of Stardom title. I thought DDT Ghost Philadelphia had a great match with Mike Bailey and Yuki Ueno. And then Dean had 2 4.5-star matches for me with Daniel Makabe and Timothy Thatcher, and a fantastic technical match. And also Demas and Mad Dog Connolly did a great dog collar match. I'm 100% going to have to look into Mad Dog Connolly, because that's the first time I've ever seen him. And that one was really damn good. But the best match I saw on the weekend was not Mania related. It was AEW related down in Mexico. Blue Panther Bryan Danielson was a hoot and also a holler. I love that match so much. And I know you messaged me about this match basically as soon as it was over, talking about how great it was. So Tyler, take the floor, man.
Oh, this match rocked. Blue Panther wrestling in a mask. I didn't realize he was 63 years old. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was awesome. I think it was Lucha Blog, the Cubs fan, he posted on Twitter a video clip of Blue Panther working out, and he's working out in a Planet Fitness, which I thought was incredible. I thought it was just perfect. No, they had a technical match. They did a lot of grappling. They did some dives to the outside. Blue Panther looked fantastic, especially when you consider his age. It was awesome. I did miss the finish, which stunk. I thought that they were going to have a few more minutes. My wife needed me upstairs with the dogs. Then I come down and they're in the ring talking. I'm like, oh, crap. But I caught the finish. Blue Panther thought he had tapped out Danielson, but Danielson got his foot under the rope, and Blue Panther celebrating. And then Danielson ends up eventually getting him in the LaBelle lock, and Blue Panther taps. And they're going to have a match in AEW. How awesome is that? Blue Panther is going to come to America and do a match with Danielson. And Mystico, a few days later, challenged Danielson to an Apuestas match, which, hell yes, that Danielson get his head shaved by Mystico. Like, I'm all for it.
We'll see if that happens, because Lucha is the land of let's tweet about stuff we want to have happen and never do it. But that would rule. I would love to see Danielson and Mystico, and I feel like Danielson would probably want to do that. So fingers crossed.
I thought initially that, hey, maybe that could be a Forbidden Door match, but
hey, maybe, who knows?
I was told it's no, you're going to want to do that in Mexico. I'm like, okay, like, yeah, I'm not going to fight you on it.
Yeah. It would be cool regardless of where it happened, and I hope it does occur.
But. Mm-hmm. I agree completely. I highly recommend you seek out that Blue Panther Bryan Danielson match, and they're going to find a way to do it in America. That could be a Forbidden Door match. But I would guess them they might try to do that at Double or Nothing and try to say have somebody else for Forbidden Door. Maybe it's a match with Mystico, and maybe that leads to an Apuestas match. I don't know, but we're going to have some CMLL talent on Forbidden Door, and hopefully we can get guys like Hechicero's visas figured out, because it wasn't going to be quite enough for WrestleMania weekend, but possibly for Forbidden Door, because that got announced today, Fred. June 30th. Let me pull up the press release here. That they announced their whole pay-per-view schedule for the year. And
yes, they have.
They will be outside of what was already announced. They'll be at Forbidden Door June 30th in Long Island. They will be All In at Sunday, August 25th at Wembley. All Out is returning to Hoffman Estates and the Now Arena, where the original All In was, not at the United Center this year, on Sunday, September 1st. Saturday, October 12th, will be Wrestle Dream at the Tacoma Dome in Tacoma, Washington, which I think was the home of the first one. I know it was in the Pacific Northwest and in Washington, but the Tacoma Dome might be a new venue. Saturday, November 23rd, will be Full Gear at the Prudential Center in Newark, New Jersey. And Saturday, December 28th, AEW World's End at Addition Financial Arena in Orlando, Florida. No new events from last year. So there will be 8 pay-per-views. The only month without a pay-per-view in it will be July, but June 30th is basically July. So they'll have a good 7-8 week build up to All In and All Out. And the location's pretty chalk. I mean, Long Island and Newark both getting AEW pay-per-views feels a little overkill. Like Long Island and Newark are just a few hours from each other at most. I think St. Louis getting Dynasty rules, because St. Louis is a great wrestling town. Kind of ignoring the Midwest and like the deep South here, as far as the pay-per-view schedule, really focusing. Well, I guess they're not ignoring the Midwest with St. Louis and Chicago, but this pay-per-view schedule just feels pretty chalk.
Yep. Yeah, it feels like a pretty basic schedule. And that's okay. I think first of all, the Young Bucks have lied once again, and Charleston, West Virginia is not getting their promised pay-per-view one of these days. I do think that it's a reasonable schedule. You know, I can't complain about it that much. So it's about what you would expect. I don't know. That's all I got on it. It's not exactly deep thoughts. But I feel like it's a reasonable schedule. So, it'll be interesting to see what they pull out on those shows.
Yeah, I agree completely. Let's have a conversation about this Dynamite, Fred. It was a very interesting show. I missed the first few minutes as I was finishing up my Vikings YouTube show. The AEW World Title Eliminator match between Samoa Joe and the Natural Dustin Rhodes ended up getting pushed back, because I missed the attack, so I don't know exactly what happened, but Swerve ambushed him on the ramp. They brawled to the arena floor, and then Swerve apparently speared Samoa Joe through a table that Samoa Joe had prepped against a guardrail, and they ended up separating the two, and that ended up building to the match, which would end up being the main event. I like Swerve attacking here. And then he's going to do another attack later on, which we'll discuss. But I think this is good. It's building some heat. It's building up Swerve to be this kind of like quote unquote monster. I liked it, even though I only saw the end of it.
Yeah, it was a pretty solid attack. Just a basic angle. There are actually a few bread and butter angles like that on tonight's show. And I thought this was one of them, just kind of basic angles that continue storylines and did a decent job of doing so.
Yeah, 100%. Next up, Renee Paquette is backstage at Orange Cassidy's locker room. She was assured that Orange would be addressing the heartless actions of Trent Barretta. Then we had...
They never did.
I'm guessing that'll be coming next week or on Collision or Rampage. They do a lot with Orange Cassidy on Rampage, so it wouldn't shock me if it ended up being there.
But they didn't even mention that it'd be on Rampage or anything, so...
No, but, I mean, to me, I'm not super worried about the fact that they said he would be addressing it. It's just as long as they do. It can wait a week. It's not the end of the world. This felt, I don't know about you, but this felt very long. TNT Championship match, the Rated R Superstar Adam Copeland defeated Penta El Cerro Miedo with Alex Abrahantes. It was good. Penta looked like a bottle of blue raspberry. I think it's Faygo. Which I thought was awesome.
Faygo should introduce a diet version of that so Penta can advertise it containing zero calorias.
Listen, I'm in.
Copyright me. Pay me lots of money for that idea. Thank you.
I love it. I absolutely love it. Look, this was a good match. 3.5, but it just felt like it took too long. Plus, it had two picture-in-picture breaks, which is never a good sign. It's hard to keep momentum in a match when you do multiple picture-in-pictures, even though a picture-in-picture theoretically rocks. It also doesn't. So,
I these days I just skip them, to be honest. I very rarely get anything worthwhile out of the picture-in-picture. So,
yeah, but then after the match is where the important stuff happens. Lights go out, lights come back on. And Julia Hart is standing in front of Copeland. And Brody King blindsides him, begins to stomp him. Smashed Cope with a running boot. And then a rear naked choke. And Willow Nightingale sprinted to the ring and began to ground pound Julia. This is kind of continuing to build the match that was announced for Dynasty. Copeland, Mark Briscoe, and Eddie Kingston versus the House of Black. A real fire pro wrestling button smash team. But... it was good.
Yeah. Yeah, I enjoyed it. Stokely had a fantastic line where he tried to apologize to Eddie for saying in public that he smelled like Newports and Burger King. I continue to insist this is the best work of Stokely's AEW career. So let's
Stokely's so good. He's tremendous. I love Stoke. More Stoke, please. More. Yeah, this was awesome. And then Renee ends up backstage with Mark Briscoe and Mad King Eddie Kingston. Copeland.
Oh, we just did this, right?
Oh yeah, but I'm just there's a little bit more to it. That she's asking about like their title match, and they just kind of blow it off that like they're fighting. It's like, look, we went to war. That's what we do. And then Stokely. Not only the Burger King line, but he said, what about next week? You put the TNT championship on the line against Willow Nightingale, which yeah. I thought was tremendous.
Good bit.
And Copeland calls them the Rated Chicken Hawks.
Yeah, which is great, bizarre Adam Copeland idea. WWE guys really love coming over and coming up with these awkward team names.
Look, It's fun. Sometimes they hit. Jericho is still my all time favorite. I think that's just phenomenal for so many reasons. But look, the Rated Chicken Hawks just so bad, but it's so bad. I like it. And then now we had Matthew and Nicholas Jackson in their dressing room to present the backstage footage. They talk explicitly about, the first scapegoat being Jack Perry, you know, the first reference to his New Japan gimmick on AEW television, which is important. And I think he's probably going to come back into the company as the scapegoat. And they talk about FTR being the masterminds of this entire thing, which I think is phenomenal. And this is why I really believe that it wasn't a failure and it was good, because look, you can't fully win. You're calling this guy, you're basically making this guy look like a chode. And you're saying his buddies were responsible for it. Yes. All yes. This was great. But then you get Cash and Dax Harwood coming out to the ring, and Cash is wearing a Bart Simpson t-shirt. I can't remember what it said, but it was awesome.
I didn't get a good look at it.
And then Cash is like, why are we showing this? What are you two hoping to accomplish other than having a built-in excuse as to why you lost, at Wembley? I am sick and tired of hearing about this and talking about this. Everyone back there, us, we are ready to move on, put this in the past. But instead, we're showing videos from 8 months ago because the Bucks can't let go that they lost to FDR. At Dynasty, we have to beat you. It's not for legacy or history. It's because I'm sick of you. And Dax, so that's our bosses. Every interview they have, they all know that without them, hundreds of people would be out of a job. Without them, AEW probably wouldn't exist. Scary thing is, I don't necessarily disagree with them. Without the Young Bucks, I might be still shaving Cash's back. Like, this is awesome. I'm more excited for this match because of the FTR promo more than I am the Bucks. But you don't get the FTR promo without what the Bucks did. So I thought this worked really well to get me more excited. I'm not sold that it worked for the masses. And to me, that I think that's the bigger issue here.
Yeah, I don't know. It felt weird to me, but we kind of already went over that. So
Next up, you had 5 minutes with Ospreay. We already talked about this. And then he goes and hypes up Bryan Danielson and does his little shtick and say, look, I'm going to beat your ass. And I think this was my favorite line. So let this be a painful little jab back that you don't not throw stones at an assassin with a machine gun. That was a good line.
Yeah.
But yeah, just says I'm going to beat your dynasty and I'm on another level. Overall, solid promo from Ospreay, but it's the only thing people are going to talk about is the line about grinding up against your boss's daughter.
Yeah.
Trios match, Lionheart, Chris Jericho. Before this match, I thought was really cool. They did a backstage segment with Lionhook and Shibata, and Jericho is basically laying out the strategy of the match, saying exactly how it's going to go and how we're going to tag. And then that ended up playing into the finish of the match. But then Shibata, chapping fucking baby, the hitting on Renee with the Translate app was just great.
Yeah, I forgot about that for a second, but yes, he sure did that. what a time to be alive. But yeah, I enjoyed this. I like the coming Chris Jericho heel turn that we're getting, and let's keep it going.
Yeah, and it was also really important to this whole process, that backstage segment. And then when things didn't go their way, Jericho ends up pulling Hook down and they start arguing. And then Shibata gets taken out by Shane Taylor Promotions and they get a much needed win because they've done a lot of losing lately on Collision. Yeah. This was also Anthony Agogo's first match since the match against Cody in June of 2021. Been gone from the company almost 3 years, probably for the better. He spent a lot of time in Rev Pro and doing some stuff in Europe. I didn't really get much of a chance to see him, but he wasn't bad. So we're going to take that in the bank and hopefully that there's some improvement there.
Yeah. Fingers crossed.
Yeah. Looks like we're continuing and speeding up that storyline with Chris Jericho and Hook, and then Okada in a squash match against Cristiano Argento. My God, is there anything that looks better, Fred, than Okada rainmakering a jobber?
It's pretty darn good.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It's so good. Just obliterates him to the shadow realm, and then he grabs a mic and it's not broken English, but it's slow because obviously English is Okada's second language. Just, hey Pac, I accept your challenge. I'll see you at Dynasty. The bastard comes out, and then you get the Young Bucks attacking Pac, which I thought was really cool. Pac's music kind of slowly faded into the Young Bucks, and as Pac's walking down the ring, you can see the Young Bucks video on the Titantron coming, so they're coming, but you don't really hear the music. you kind of have to be aware of what's going on. And then they jump back and they get in the ring, and then you get FTR coming down. So I'm guessing we're going to end up seeing these guys in a trios match. But it did end with EVP trigger on FTR, and then Okada hitting Pac in the side of the head with a chair. This came off great.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought this was a pretty good segment. I liked it. I thought it did a much better job building to the match than the earlier stuff. But again, that's just me. I thought there was something I was going to add. Just in terms of match quality on this show, I thought it was a down week for Dynamite. I only had one match break, like 3.5. You know, if you have time, you should watch it. Barrier, and that was Penta and Adam Copeland. Mm-hmm. And I had the main go 3.25 because I thought it was pretty good. But other than that, like, nothing else really came close. And it was kind of a rough week in the ring.
Yeah, I didn't think it was necessarily great either, but not everybody can be a winner here. Then you've got Jay White backstage with the Bang Bang Gang bragging about his accomplishments. Look, Jay White's a great promo, and I want to see him get... I want to see him get more involved in some bigger storylines. But before that, you got to kind of get rid of all the stuff with the Acclaimed. He wants a match on Rampage, but told the Guns he wants to find him someone besides Billy. I don't know Rampage spoilers, so we'll kind of see who that is. Then we had the Timeless Tony Charleston Championship Champagne Toast for Thunder Rosa.
Mm-hmm.
And stormed through glass champagne in Thunder Rosa's eyes. Cracked her in the head with a silver tray and smeared Thunder Rosa's face paint before Deonna Purrazzo saves her. And that leads into Mariah May versus Anna Jay.
Yeah. You notice that they really haven't been letting Tony cut promos recently.
That's a really interesting point. No, I haven't noticed that.
It feels like in general her stuff's been very short, and the longer promos are not a thing that they're doing right now with her. I don't know.
Probably for the best. Let's just be honest here.
Probably.
Yeah, it's a very interesting point, Fred, because it's not necessarily something that I had considered, but it stands out. Mariah May, Anna Jay. Mariah May is obviously still doing the old school Toni Storm gimmick. And Mariah May ends up getting the win, and Anna applies the Queen Slayer after the loss because she's pissed. Out comes Mina Shirakawa, and Mina brings in two glasses of champagne, gives some to Mariah, and then gives her a big kiss on the lips.
Yep.
Are we getting a lover's storyline here?
I don't know. I genuinely do not know what we're doing here and where it's going to go, but I guess we'll see. It's interesting. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah. Alex Marvez backstage with Mercedes Moné, talking about Double or Nothing, where 5 years ago they made history with the first Double or Nothing. And then she decides to make history again when she heads to Vegas to become the TBS champion because Moné changes everything. Man, she's not a good fit right now for this company, and they need to kind of figure it out with her. They got to get her in the ring sooner rather than later, and it doesn't feel like they're going to.
It did not work. Look, the best thing that Mercedes does is wrestle, and she desperately is better that she's just a lot better at that than she is at talking, as I stumble over my words ironically, but I think that she really needs to just get in the ring and get away from these pre-tapes. I don't think they're working, and we gotta get it going, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they need to kind of get this thing going. It's frustrating, but I mean, it is what it is right now. They're going to slow play it with Moné, which, you know, I don't think I would be doing that because the promos aren't very good and she needs time. I really think she needs a talker. I think it would be great to see Stokely join her, yes. But Stokely's with Willow. We'll kind of see how that develops.
I still think that we're going to get a heel turn on Willow, but I think it's
even clearer
than it was a couple weeks ago.
And I wonder if they want to have a mouthpiece with Willow when she turns heel, because she's got all that baby face energy. So that's something intriguing to look at. And then we have the main event, the AEW World Title Eliminator with Samoa Joe and the Natural Dustin Rhodes. Thought this was pretty good. And I thought it was interesting that I think it was Tony Schiavone mentioned on commentary that it's rare that Samoa Joe's in the ring with somebody who has more experience than him.
Mm-hmm.
I thought that was a really interesting line. And Joe gets the win, and then Swerve comes out of nowhere after Samoa Joe applies the sleeper to Dustin and does that house call kick, which I just absolutely love that jump hesitation kick.
Yeah, great. I thought this was a particularly well shot and well done one. I thought that was really cool.
Mm-hmm. And he then grabs the steel chain to drill Joe with the chain with a wrapped around his fist, and then he tries to hit him with it. Like a whip, and Joe gets out of the ring. I thought this crazy face. Yeah, this looked great. Prince Nana hand swerved the title, and then you get Joe looking into the camera just seething. I thought this was awesome.
Fantastic face, yeah.
Yeah, and then you have Collision and a Battle of the Belts this weekend, which, yay.
It's an hour of wrestling with matches that are sometimes pretty good.
But yeah, that's the show. Next week, I think they announced a couple matches. I just don't remember what they are right now. We're going to have another Cope Open of some sort. And hopefully that could end up being pretty good. Oh, it's not the first Wednesday of the month. Our tornado sirens are going off.
Oh, maybe you should. Let's wrap this up. Let's wrap this up real quick.
All right.
Well, everyone take care. Tyler, please don't die in a tornado. Everyone have a good week. We'll talk to you next week. Bye.
Hola, hola. My name is Ricardo. I am the host of the Lucha Jobbers podcast here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. We are a Spanish-speaking show dedicated to discussing and analyzing pro wrestling from all across the world. From AEW to CMLL, we talk about American wrestling, Japanese wrestling, and, of course, Lucha Libre. If something big happened in the pro wrestling world, we will talk about it. So if you know Spanish or have a friend that knows Spanish or want to practice your Lucha Libre pronunciations, go listen to the Lucha Jobbers podcast right here in the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. Nos vemos por ahí.